I'm going to need more light up here. Yeah, we'll have to do both of them. All right. Our verse is from the book of James, the verse that we heard today. And James is often considered the wisdom book of the New Testament. There we go. If you want to get a larger sense of how this verse that we've chosen, the verse that Rebecca read, as today's verse or this year's verse of the year, it really sets it in that wisdom context. If we look at the larger passage from which this verse is taken, so I'm going to back up and read, starting with verse 13. Through 18. It says, "Are any of you wise and understanding? Show that your actions are good with a humble lifestyle that comes from wisdom. However, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, then stop bragging and living in ways that deny the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above. Instead, it is from the earth, natural and demonic. Wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there is disorder and everything that is evil. What of the wisdom from above? First, it is pure, and then peaceful, gentle, obedient, filled with mercy and good actions, fair and genuine. Those who make peace sow the seeds of justice by their peaceful acts." So you can see how this fits in this context of understanding what wisdom is. In addition to that, the book of James kind of uses certain structures, especially in certain sections, and rhetorical devices and assumptions that are typical in the wisdom literature of our Hebrew scriptures. But here we find it in the New Testament. And so James gets the name sometimes as the wisdom book of the New Testament. Now, a few words about how we come to this idea of a verse of the year. Each year, the worship commission at the church here chooses a verse. And for the last several years, we've chosen verses based on our mission statement. And we adopted this mission statement a few years ago. And this is a good day to remember, especially on Commitment Sunday, what our mission as a church is. So I invite you to read the mission statement together with me. Lombard Mennonite Church is a worshiping community rooted in God's love, following Jesus, seeking peace and justice, serving others. So each year, the Worship Commission has, since we adopted this, has tried to kind of take one of those lines and come up with a verse of the year. So first of all, we had that rooted in God's love. And we chose 1 John, we love because God first loved us. And then with the line following Jesus, we chose John 8:12, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." And today we're revealing the verse that has to do with that line, seeking peace and justice. James 3:18, "Those who make peace sow the seeds of justice by their peaceful acts." And those of you who have mailboxes here should find, if you haven't already, one of these little magnets in your mailbox, or there are some sitting around, I think out in the areas in the foyer where you can also pick one up if you don't have one. And these are magnets that we can hold this year to kind of help us focus on this year's line of our mission statement. So what does it mean to seek peace and justice? Now, I remember when we were voting, or actually discerning, working toward consensus on adopting this mission statement. And I remember one of the questions that came up was about this word seeking. Was this the right verb to use for this mission statement? I mean, what do we really mean when we say we're seeking? Was it an active verb or more of a passive verb? Does it mean that this is an internal process? We are seeking peace and justice within ourselves? Does it mean we're looking for where it exists in the world and maybe want to sort of place ourselves in proximity to that? Does it mean that we are seeking to be transformed like Peace Pilgrim was transformed to a new life of peace and justice? Does it mean that we are trying to create peace and justice in our communities and in our worlds through our actions? So seeking could mean anything from rather passive to terribly active. But what do we mean when we say we are seeking peace and justice? This one part of our mission statement. And I should say that none of these lines, by highlighting one line, it doesn't remove it from the rest of the mission statement. We begin by being rooted in God's love. We are following Jesus, and seeking peace and justice is a way of being rooted in that love and of following Jesus. They're all connected. But what does that mean for us? So the verse we chose doesn't really use the word seek. It talks about sowing. Actually, there are two verbs that coexist, making and sowing. Making peace and sowing justice. Now, if you're not a gardener or a farmer, you probably don't think about what it means to sow things. I remember being a kid growing up on a farm and helping in my parents' garden, and to sow the seeds was to plant them in the soil. And I can remember, you know, my parents drawing these lines in the dirt, and then we would carefully place the seeds as far apart as we were directed to place them. And I remember sowing in this way. I remember my parents sowing. My father was a farmer who sowed seeds in the fields, and my mother sowed also. She, in addition to sowing in the garden, she sewed clothes for us. Well, that's a skill I never really learned. I do garden a little, but I don't sew clothes. Both my daughters actually do. My one daughter enjoys sewing comforters for Mennonite Central Committee and their development work and get sent to places in need. My other daughter is a doctor, so she sews skin when wounds need to be sewed up. But I never really got that skill. There are many different ways to sew. And the question for us today is, what does it mean for us when we say we are seeking peace and justice, or that we are sowing justice through making peace? Because this verse comes from the book of James, I think it makes some sense to think a little bit about James. That's the last line of the mission statement, serving others. I almost forgot to repeat that when we were going through. We don't have a verse of the year yet for that. That'll be next year, and I'm sure if verses are just tumbling into your minds right now, you can let Joe know. We'll figure it out next summer, but I'm sure he'd be happy to take suggestions. James, this is an icon that is commonly used, as I understand it, and Richard Blackburn will correct me if I'm wrong, because he knows this stuff really well. But it's, as I understand it, the icon that is used for James, that is the brother of Jesus, who has traditionally been credited with the book of James. Whether he wrote it himself or it comes out of that tradition of the church that he led, James is the person who we think of often when we think of the book of James. And James is an interesting character. James, the brother of Jesus, is a really important character in the New Testament. James, we may not think of him as much as people like John or Peter or Paul, but there's a lot that James has done in the New Testament. James, the brother of Jesus, was one of the people listed who saw the risen Christ. The Apostle Paul tells us that the risen Christ appeared to Peter, the 500, to James, and all the apostles. So he is specifically named in that. The Apostle Paul also tells us that James, the brother of Jesus, was one of the first three pillars of the early church. In the book of Galatians, he lists James, Peter, and John. Now, you have to be mighty important to have your name come first before Peter and John. But that's how Paul lists him. So not only was he the brother of the risen Christ and who saw Christ risen, not only was he one of the pillars of the church, we recall that when Peter miraculously escaped from prison, he immediately asks for James to be told of what has happened. And we recall that when Paul showed up in Jerusalem after his conversion, he visited Simon Peter for 15 days and saw none of the other apostles other than James, the Lord's brother. This is also told to us in Galatians. So this idea of who James is appears many times, but the act for which he is most known is an act of making peace. In Acts 15, we read about the Jerusalem Council. So the early church in Jerusalem was mostly made up of Jewish Christians, Jewish followers of Christ. But Paul had gone out to do all of, Paul and his other companions had gone out to do all this missionary work and was working with all these Gentiles who were also accepting Jesus as Lord. And so there was this conflict because Paul was not asking them to first become Jewish, and in particular was not asking them to be circumcised, to become Jewish in that sense. And so some in the church in Jerusalem were very unhappy with this and felt that Paul was not doing what he should. And so there is this council that comes together, and Paul and his companions come and they share the work of the Spirit that they have seen in their missionary journeys, and they've seen how Christ has transformed lives, and they're sharing this, and people are also hearing from those who want to preserve the Jewish faith and want to make sure that it is not lost. And so there is this debate that happens. And it is James, after Paul speaks, who guides the decision that allows Gentiles and Jews both to be part of this church together. And James, who suggests ways that they need not become fully Jewish, but respect certain traditions of the Jewish history and tenets that will bring the church together in a shared identity. It is this act of making peace for which James is best known. So if James made peace, one might ask, what then are the seeds of justice sown from making that peace? And one could name many. I mean, none of us would be here today, certainly, if there weren't some inclusion of Gentiles in this church. And so we are grateful in that sense. But in particular, not long after this Jerusalem Council occurs, we find Paul taking up a collection among the Gentiles for this Jerusalem church. You see, it was difficult for them. They were very poor. There were a lot of poor widows in the church, a lot of people struggling, a lot of needs in this church, a ministry of needs. And so Paul then goes out to these very people that the church was initially questioned, and he takes a collection. And then he brings that collection back and offers it to the church. And poverty is squelched for those for whom the church serves. Justice has been sown. And even in Paul's return to this church, James helps guide that return, and encouraging Paul to go and wash and maintain these purification rituals, because it's still very important to people in the church. And he guides Paul. He is an advisor. He shares wisdom of how to bring together two cultures in just ways. I think this model that we see in James guides how we too can think of making peace and sowing justice. In a sense, what we're saying here is simply that old ends means question. That the means of sowing peace are the only way to truly create the ends of doing justice. It's not a philosophy that is much espoused in conventional wisdom today. It's not touted by those we hear speaking the loudest, who argue that it is appropriate to do whatever it takes to get the end one wants, whether that be power or money or vengeance or retribution or just your own way. This is the wisdom of the world in many ways. But it doesn't jive very well with the wisdom in our wisdom literature. Let's remember what this verse says, what this context says about wisdom. Are any of you wise and understanding? Show that your actions are good with a humble lifestyle that comes from wisdom. However, if you have bitter jealousy and selfish ambition in your heart, then stop bragging and living in ways that deny the truth. This is not the wisdom that comes down from above. Instead, it is from the earth, natural and demonic. Wherever there is jealousy and selfish ambition, there is disorder and everything that is evil. What of the wisdom from above? First, it is pure, then peaceful, gentle, obedient, filled with mercy and good actions, fair and genuine. Those who make peace sow the seeds of justice by their peaceful acts. This, one commentator argues, is really the heart of the book of James, this wisdom book that we have. This commentator, she writes, let me find where she writes. This commentator writes, oh my goodness, I got my papers. Here we go. She writes, if there is an overarching theme in James, it is not the things we usually think of. His railing against hypocrisy, the verse about faith without works that irritated Martin Luther. The overarching theme would be his plea for us not to be double-minded, literally of two souls, one following the wisdom of the world and the other following the wisdom of God. We can't do both. Live with purity of heart, which is to say live with integrity, manifest God's wisdom, seek peace, respect others. In that sense, these texts are the heart of the letter. Who have you seen embodying this kind of peace and justice seeking in your life? My guess is that many of us might look to others in this room today as models of this. I know I could. And yet, I also know that because this way of living includes a humble lifestyle without bragging and selfish ambition, there are many acts of making peace and justice that are done quietly that we don't know about each other. Only God knows. But this kind of wise living is our model. And it's also important that I say that while I am inspired by many of you here today, this is not the epicenter of seeking peace and justice in our world. Look, all around us, there are people living in this sorts of wisdom and all around the world. And it is our invitation this year to link arms with others who will be models for us and who will empower us to embody this kind of making peace and seeking justice. I invite you all to take your magnet home with you and put it somewhere on your refrigerator or some other place where you can see it. And when you stop and notice it throughout the year, let it sink into you as if you are the soil and these words are the seeds being planted, sown in you. Let us open our hearts individually and congregationally to think of ways that we can live out this mission of our congregation together, this wisdom of God together, this seeking peace and justice together. With God's help, let it be so.